This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to Carcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Bill Goldberg. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing okay, my friend. How are you?
Good. Studio's looking good. Gear's functional.
We're getting there.
Microphone, headphones. It's getting there.
Yeah, slowly but surely. I'm going to have one thing to the list. But, you know, one of these days I'll get a desk and proper sound deadening, and I'll be you know, halfway there.
It's good. It's looking good. We got a lot to go over. We want to welcome Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com back to the show. Just came back from New York Auto Show and a bunch of other things since the last time we spoke. How are you, Alistair?
I'm good, thanks, Matt. Nice to be joining you gentlemen again.
How was New York?
New York was fun. You know, I need to go to New York once a year just for a sort of injection of life.
But yeah.
It was a year since I'd been. The last time I was actually there for the auto show, and then you really got the feeling that it was like the end of pandemic and New York had suffered a bit. But actually this time it felt like it was buzzing. It was it's fun to hang out there for a few days. But I guess you're asking about the cars.
Well, a little bit of New York as well, but how's the landscape of New York Auto Show? I'm seeing a lot of press coming out of New York Auto Show, more than I thought. So because in the previous years, I know with pandemic and stuff, but it looked like New York Auto Show was, I don't know, maybe not getting quite as much attention. I thought some of the manufacturers were not showing up, but I don't know if it was just full or just the few cars that were debuted got a lot of attention.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. Certainly compared to Detroit last year, that was super depressing. New York did feel like a bit of a renaissance. Most of your mainstream brands were there. The luxury brands still didn't turn up, but Hyundai, Genesis, Kia, they went big. You also had the new Ram EV truck, which we can talk about, the Ram Rev. And then, it had a good feel. There was media there. There was the show was pretty full. There was a sort of sense of buzz about it that's been missing from, you know, from last year's New York Auto Show, particularly from Detroit, a little bit more towards what LA was. And, you know, I think people are still trying to work out whether auto shows are a good thing or a bad thing. But, you know, Nissan were there, Chevy, Ford, most of your big players. A few little weird things. Like I went to see the new Lamborghini and I sat down with their CEO, and they were literally half a mile from the show in like a private bunker. They had this little secret headquarters in Manhattan. Yet the only cars at the show were dealer cars. So it's kind of like a little bit of me saying, well, you know, the 16-year-old me wants to go to an auto show to see the new Lamborghini close up. And I'm potentially the customer of the future. So there was still a bit of kind of like, you know, weird thinking going on, but definitely worth going. And, you know, I hope it does well. As you know, I'm a bit of a fan of these things.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Ram 1500 Rev. We talked a little bit about this at one point. The concept vehicle that I believe was at CES was very cool looking, kind of over the top, with its whole like pass through going, you know, from front to back, you know, with storage. And then the production version, I guess, announced maybe after Super Bowl or around Super Bowl, and it just looked like a Ram 1500 with batteries, like a facelift, a little bit of a facelift, new headlights. But now at New York Auto Show, you're getting some more specs on it. And I don't know if these are just sort of wishful thinking specs or is this realistic, but some of the things that came up were 500 mile range, 14,000 pound towing capacity, and 2,700 pound payload capacity. Now, the caveat being, maybe similar to the Ford Lightning, if you're going to tow, your range is probably about half. If you're going to tow you know, a few thousand pounds, you're obviously going to cut into that range a bit. But what have you heard?
Numbers you mentioned don't go together. That's where.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, the horsepower and torque, 14,000 pounds towing capacity, sure, for 120 miles, not 500 miles. But I don't know. Like, if you got a chance to get up and see it in person, what do you think?
Or how promising is it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of what you said. We saw the concept. It looks so. I don't know why they did that, actually, because he created a level of expectation that they were never really going to fulfill. It does look like a slightly cooler version of a traditional Ram 1500, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Inside, it's a bit of a fusion of like upmarket traditional Ram Qs, but then you've also got some neat little gadgets, like you've got an extra screen that you can specify in front of the passenger, things like that. The specs were the big takeaway, and you know, there's some really big numbers here. The bigger battery pack is 229 kilowatts. Now, to put that into context, I want to say a Model 3 has got around 70 kilowatts. You know, a typical thing like a Rivian's up at 130. This is more than the Hummer. That is a massive battery pack, which means not only massive money, as well, it's going to be north of 100 grand, we reckon, but it's also going to be so heavy. Yeah. You know, you can have range if you have the battery pack. And even the standard battery pack is like 168 kilowatts, so 8 kilowatt hours. So even the standard one's big. And then it's like, okay, we're just going to win the spec race by fitting this enormous battery, which you'll have to pay for and have to lug around the whole time.
How does it compare with the weight of the Hummer? Because that's the only thing battery-wise, if I'm not mistaken, that comes in weight-wise.
We haven't got weight figures off Ram. But just that battery pack, you know, I was talking to, I did an interview with Nissan's head of EVs, and we were talking about it a little bit. I was like, dude, this is a big thing. And we reckoned it's going to be 8,000 to 9,000 pounds.
Yeah.
has to be just to lug around all that battery.
But
so, then you've got like, yeah, the Hummer's like,
the Hummer was, how much did the Hummer come in weight wise?
It's something like 9,000 pounds, but similar size battery. They have it's a 212.7 kilowatt battery, I believe. Yeah. So you're going to have to come into similar specs, you know, weight and whatnot, because like you said, the battery alone is massive.
We're getting pretty close to like the 1,000 pound, 100 grand truck. I think we're at the 100 grand truck already with this.
Yeah.
That's a very realistic way of putting it.
I think my Ford Lightning has 130 or 131 kilowatt battery. So jumping to, I don't know, what'd you say? 210, 209?
229.
229. All right. So almost a 100 kilowatt more. I mean, it's almost twice the battery, which I don't know where you put it. Maybe it's stacked thicker. Maybe they figured out a way to, you know, go from this battery to this super tall battery. I don't know.
I mean, their big messaging was, we're not first to the game, but we're going to be better. So it's like, we've looked at what Ford's done with the Lightning. We've looked at the specs of Silverado EV. So we just said, like, how do we go bigger? And that's their pitch. But the other thing is charging this thing. I mean, as you know from your Lightning, Matt, you know, if you're even got a level 2 home system, which is what most of us have now, you know, you're not out, you're adding what's about seven or eight kilowatt hours per hour. So even if you charge this thing overnight, you're nowhere close to topping it up. So the whole infrastructure takes like another leap. And if you're going to stop at even a reasonably fast charger and try and charge 220 kilowatt hours, like, you're going to be, you know, you might as well get a hotel room even on a fast charger.
It's interesting because the specs are impressive, but they're doing it with just throwing massive battery at it. So you're right. So the weight of the vehicle, the charge time of the vehicle, it's not that it's an efficient vehicle by any means. You know, it's not like they're coming to the table with some new advancements in battery technology where they're saying, hey, you know, for the same size battery as a Ford Lightning, we can get you more range. And that's not what's happening here.
Bigger is better.
If you're going to do it, I guess do it on a full-size pickup truck or something like the Hummer or whatever. Like, doing it in something sportier doesn't necessarily make sense. Actually, a good example of this is I just watched on Edvins.com the drag race that you guys did between the Lucid and the Corvette Z06, and the Lucid being so incredibly fast in a straight line, but by the time you guys had to go do the U-turn and come back the other way, the Z06 was kicking its ass, basically, because all that weight and all that mass, and I assume, you know, a fairly average all-season tire makes all the difference in the world. So this Ram 1500, I like that the range is there. I'm sure it's going to be pretty quick 0 to 60, but if you need to throw that weight around a corner or something, or I guess we'll know more as you guys test the Hummer as well, you got to stop, right? You have to stop. So between brakes and tires, what kind of wear and tear is there? But anyway.
And as we talked about it before, like, if you're in you're in your family RAV4, you don't want to get hit by a 9,000-pound truck.
No.
The RAV4 9,000-pound battery.
Yeah, the RAV4 would explode. It would be nuts. Anyway, it's interesting to see. I don't know where we go with that technology. Like, I remember talking to a Ford engineer a while back, and he's like, you know, they released the Mustang Mach-E and they said, well, you know, with some software updates, we can try to make things a little bit more efficient, maybe get you a little bit more range. But the next version of that vehicle, they think they can get more range simply because they kind of overkilled on the development. They said just the amount of cooling capacity for the batteries, the length of wiring harnesses and the size of cable and just all those little things add up to weight. And they said, if we cut some of that down and still meet all of the benchmarks that vehicle needs to meet, then that's one way to increase the range as well, by just making the vehicle lighter, more aerodynamic, more efficient.
Yeah, and the next thing that's coming at some point is solid-state batteries, but that's still a way off, and that's probably going to be like a trickle-down of expensive technology, and, you know, we're still a few years away from that. The one thing the Ram has got, which the Lightning hasn't, is the fast-charging 800-volt architecture, so at least you've got that in its favor.
If you could find a charger.
If you can find a 350 charger that's A, working, and B, available, and hasn't got like a Nissan Leaf plugged into it while somebody's gone shopping.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a cool thing. I like the way the interior is fantastic. The interior is like,
it's nice.
The Ram's got a great interior to start with, and now it's got even more at market. But again, at a price.
You know, Fisker should be having their SUV, their little SUV, come out pretty soon, and they're claiming a pretty substantial range on that vehicle, and it's not very big. I haven't dug into it too much, but maybe it's something to look at in the future if you don't already know. But I don't know if they're doing anything different with battery technology to make that happen, or if they're, or I don't know, make like maybe the entire body of the car is plastic and it's lighter weight. I'm not sure what's going on with that vehicle. I mean, it's cool looking. I just don't know much about it. And since I don't think anybody's really driven it yet, maybe other than like a prototype they had out here for photos. You know, I saw it in Monterey. Like, I walked past it and saw it in Monterey, and I get it was, you know, the fit and finish wasn't there and all that, because it's a prototype. It's the hand-built version of it. But, you know, but I think they said something like 400-mile range.
Yeah, I think, again, it's like depending on how big your battery. I'm not aware that anything particularly clever. That thing's built by Magna Steyr in Austria, who make things like the GLB and things like that. So I don't think there's anything super clever about it. Certainly not at the price point. I think it's going to be quite a nice thing. But it'd be interesting. We got one on order, we're still not clear on when we're actually going to see it.
Right. I mean, like I said, I think it looks kind of interesting, and I think there's a good market for it. And unfortunately for Fisker, is so many of the other car companies producing electric vehicles have had to change their story that's affecting Fisker. So when Fisker goes, oh, hey, we've got this great little SUV. It'll get 400 miles of range. It'll cost $40,000 and it'll be available everywhere. We go, yeah, that's great. But we've heard that 9 times from every other car company and nobody's ever done it. And every time I fire up my computer, I get a press release going, the price of so-and-so SUV has increased, you know, or you know, EV has increased. So like, or the range isn't really happening what they promised. You know, I was like, so I'm not blaming Fisker. Fisker hasn't even launched the car yet, but already they're sort of getting, you know, the worst of everybody else's press by going, yeah, sure, we'll see it. Good luck. All right. So what's next? So you, LA Auto Show, you mentioned Genesis. I noticed this Genesis SUV, coupe, I guess, taking a page out of Audi and Mercedes and BMW and coming up with, that's a sharp looking vehicle.
Yeah, it's very orange. I went to the unveil of that on the Monday night. Genesis got this quite cool, we call it Genesis House down on the Hudson, which is all about kind of Korean lifestyle and everything else. So it's really, really sort of smart place. It's, yeah, you're right, Matt. It's kind of a BMW X6, Mercedes GLE coupe, that kind of thing. So it's based on the GV80, but it's got kind of slightly sharper aesthetics and it's a little bit more sporting. It's not really a concept at all in that it's definitely heading for production. And it had a few little things, like it had 4, like, you know, sort of racing seats in it and stuff like that, which in a roll cage, which will go. I really like the look of it. Genesis can't really do much wrong at the moment. They're trying to, you know, expand the brand a little bit, make it a little bit, to add a bit of sport to the luxury. But they're really on a roll, and I thought it was a
sensible price point. And away, yeah. Sorry, I'm just having a problem with my microphone. But can you guys still hear me?
I hear you, but now it sounds like maybe you're unplugged and you're going through your computer.
Oh, wonderful. So a malfunction, and it's not me.
Yeah, Bill sounds amazing now.
Oh my god, thank you, Alistair. I knew you did that just
let's see. Are you back?
Am I back? But am I sounding good?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds fine. That'll work.
There we go. We're back.
Yeah.
So, Genesis was nice, as I was saying. Yeah, I thought that was a good thing. I love the first time I'd seen the Ioniq 6 as well in real life.
Okay.
That's a really cool, that's that sort of Model 3 rival, but looks like a bit like an old Mercedes CLS, but it's them trying to do something that's quite futuristic and super aerodynamic. And I think it looks really cool.
What was the coolest thing you took away from New York Auto Show?
Anything
catch you off guard that you weren't expecting?
I enjoyed, as they say, Lamborghini were up the road, and I think they were taking the opportunity that there was a media in town to do something. And I had a good look at the Rebulto. It's supposed to be pronounced in Spanish, which is the new V12. Car, and I sat down with their CEO, and that when I saw the pictures of that, it looked a little bit like it was a kind of mishmash of a little bit of Murcielago here, a little bit of Aventador, a little bit of Countach, and all the rest of it. But actually, in real life, it looks great, and it's the first Lamborghini that somebody who's over 6 foot can actually get comfortable in. I think you might be able to drive this one, Bill.
Oh, Christ! There's good and bad in that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but it's got, like, it's another one with, like, 1,000 horsepower because it's got 800 and something from the V12 plus 3 electric motors. So it's got over 1,000 horsepower. And this is like the normal version. No doubt there'll be a lightweight, you know, one built on top of this. And I was like, yeah, it's like 1,000 horsepower. And this is like your starting point. So it's all getting a bit silly. But there's some really interesting stuff. Like Lamborghini's going to do an EV in 2028, and their first one is going to be like a GT car. If you remember, like, they had the Espada and stuff back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a 2+2 GT car, and that's going to be their first EV in 28. Then in 2029, there's going to be an electric version of the Urus, which will be the next generation Urus. And then only when you get into the 2030s are they going to consider doing sort of EV versions of their supercars. So they're going to keep going with the V12, which I thought was quite cool. So you get 800 horsepower V12 and then three electric motors.
The Lamborghini, the 2 plus 2 that you're talking about, do you think it's going to be a two-door or it's going to be a four-door like the Aston Martin Rapide?
No, it's a definite two-door. Stefan Winkelmann's the CEO. He used to run Bugatti as well. He's been there forever, or on and off forever. No, he was pretty clear. It's a two-door. It's a 2 plus 2. So similar in concept to like a Ferrari Roma, although they hate comparing themselves to Ferrari. But it's going to be more expensive than a Urus. So it's probably going to be today's money, 300 grand plus. So kind of super exclusive, but more of a daily driver than a Huracan is, for example. So you'll kind of have in the lineup, you'll start with the Urus SUV, and that will have gas, hybrid, and EV eventually. Then you'll have this 2 plus 2 as like a fourth model lineup. Then you'll have the replacement for the Huracan, which will be probably hybrid. Well, she will be hybrid. And then you'll have the new, you know, the V12 supercar, which is obviously hybrid, and you know, we're driving it later this year.
Well, to me, that sounds like an exciting future for me.
Do we know? First of all, I'm because we've talked about electrification for the use of performance, and the supercar with the 12 cylinder engine at 800 horsepower plus combined with electric motors and making it all wheel drive. That sounds like so much fun to me.
Exactly, that's why I asked that.
You know, I mean, to be able to hear, because first of all, the Lamborghini 12 cylinder is a fantastic sounding engine already. I mean, you can just hear that thing from a mile away, but you hear it's a 12 cylinder. It's so good. I mean, their 10 is good, but the 12 is just so good. And driving the Aventador is just a fantastic oral experience. You know, but combining it with And kind of making it the super version of the Acura NSX, right? Like something along the lines of that is interesting. Now, if it works and they take that sort of mentality and, like you said, apply it to an Urus hybrid, that makes the SUV pretty interesting as well. But already the SUV sounds pretty good, even with the 8-cylinder. But it's not like the 12, so. Super interesting, I think, on that car, that new 12 cylinder, and it's a completely new gas engine. It's not a carryover, from what I understand.
And the Urus, you're right. And the Urus is kind of propping. Lamborghini's going to do 10,000 cars this year, probably for the first time ever. And you know, nearly half of that is Urus. So that's kind of their sort of bedrock now. But they're determined that they've got to do these things properly.
Now, there's going to be a bit of a learning curve. So, you know, like, I don't know where Lamborghini stands with electrification. Maybe they're talking to, you know, Audi and VW Group and whatever to make that happen. But Ferrari with the LaFerrari, that car, I understand, has some issues in McLaren P1. Talking to Aaron Hagar, his dad's LaFerrari, I think that car went in for warranty work or whatever and had the battery replaced maybe twice on that thing. There was something with the charging on it and it fries the battery and it doesn't really work well. And a cool car when it works, but there was an issue with that. And Bill, I don't know if your brother has a lot of Ferrari. I know he's a Ferrari fanatic, but he had some cool cars, but I don't think La Ferrari was one of them, but there were some issues there. And now we're getting into the next steps as far as electrification. Like, how many years were in between the McLaren P1 and the new McLaren Artura, right? Which is their hybrid with some electrification. So hopefully they learned something.
Yeah, we had one in the office a couple of weeks ago alongside a Maserati MC20. That's a hell of a looking, that's a hell of a great looking car. But
actually, both those cars are very pretty. We saw at the Velocity Invitational event up at Laguna Seca, it was all pretty much sponsored by McLaren, so they had a handful of those cars around at the track. But yeah, that Maserati is gorgeous.
Yeah, and I was talking about like do they want to do another hypercar, you know, like a LaFerrari P1? And kind of saying that it's actually quite a hard to make a business case for it. They'll do one-offs, you know, those like, you know, like sort of like versions of for super mm-hmm. rich collectors, but actually to start engineering a genuine hypercar like a P1 or a LaFerrari is, it's hard to make a business case today.
Right. Mercedes is still finishing up their, the Mercedes One or something. It's basically AMG. Like an F1 car with a roof and seats and headlights.
Yeah. And the Valkyries are sort of just starting to hit the road. And it's kind of fun that these things exist, but I don't know why, but I don't get as excited about them as I once did.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of interesting. The Mercedes was announced so long ago that by the time that car gets delivered, I don't even know if there's real fanfare with it. I'm sure to the person buying it, yeah. But to the rest of us, we're like, isn't that the concept car from 6 years ago? It's like, I thought exactly. We already did that. We just didn't get enough information or updates. Like, they couldn't just keep pushing it. And again, that's the problem with making these announcements and not getting the car out within, you know, 24 months. If you're talking 4, 5, 6 years, it's like, I thought the car came out. Is it 6 year old technology? Like, where are we with that thing? You don't really know. But with Lamborghini's case, you know, Ferrari's got the Pure Sangue, their SUV with a 12 cylinder. I don't know if it will always be a 12 cylinder, but it's a 12 cylinder now. And I'm sure there's going to be some sort of hybrid version or whatever on that. And what was interesting is when I was talking to Aaron Hagar, his dad was invited as a Ferrari collector, as a Ferrari owner, his dad was invited to get on the list to purchase one. And he turned it down because he's like, I don't know, it's not a Ferrari. And then more information came out about it. And he's like, well, what are you driving like daily around town? And he goes, so Aaron's like, maybe you should look at the Ferrari. And anyway, long story short, he ordered it and he's going to give it a try. He's got the Pure Sangue on order. I think it's the like Grigio gray with the Bordeaux like red interior and the 12 cylinder. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic, but it'll be interesting to kind of really see and drive in person. Going to have to try to schedule a little visit over to San Diego's house down in Newport
area. Hey, Sammy, I just want to see
you. Yeah. Hey, Sammy, I haven't seen you in a while. I just thought maybe I'd come by and go for a spin in your new Ferrari SUV.
Well, the cat's out of the bag now.
So yeah, right?
You've got to come up with something.
Okay, so another thing I wanted to bring up was BMW XM. I'm starting to lose track of the BMWs and what's electric and what's not electric and what's hybrid and what's going on. But BMW XM and then BMW XM label red, I think.
Yes, because red label is Bentley. Bentley has red label.
So they literally had to go label red instead of
red. Yeah, I think label. That's why. I'm almost certain that's why. I don't think they admit it, but that's probably why.
Yeah, I mean, they could have just, I don't know, maybe come up with something a little different, but sure.
So you know, we did a fully tested video that you might have seen on YouTube about this. If you don't, check it out, Edmunds Cars YouTube channel. But it, you know, people say to you like, "Is there like a bad car today?" And it's not really. Honestly, the XM is as close as I can think of to a
really
genuinely sort of bad car. It's it's the weirdest thing in the world because this is like the first M car since the M1 of what, 1978. So expectations are instantly high. It's trying to be this sort of, you know, cut price Urus or something. It's a special thing. So we were really excited about it to the point where one of the guys in the team drove it from launch event in Arizona all the way back to our test track in LA because we were like, we're going to run the numbers. It's going to be incredible, et cetera, et cetera. And it really just wasn't. It's unbelievable. So it's a plug-in hybrid with a big battery. It is unbelievably heavy. How much do you think this thing weighs? It's a 5-seater family SUV that's a bit bigger than, so it's sort of like between an X5 and an X7. So how much do you think it weighs?
I mean, because you're saying it's heavy, I'm 7,000 pounds.
A bit much, like 6,100. But that, so it weighs more than a Raptor R, V8 Raptor R. It weighs more than that. And then it has, it's just a weird mix. So the ride quality is really stiff, like unacceptably stiff. And in the front, you've got those like big M chairs that you get from the M5 and everything else. So it feels like really sporty. And then in the back, you've got this bench seat, this like squidgy bench seat, which makes it feels like you're in a Rolls Royce. So we did a little skit with me sitting in the back and being thrown around the test track. But it's like nobody's quite sure what this thing's trying to be. It's like they've got a committee to design it and everybody's had an argument. And it's it's not as fast as an X5M and it's not as grippy as an X5M, but it's a load more expensive. It's like 30, 40 grand more. And then you've got like a smaller trunk and there's just, it's just strange. And that's before we even talk about how it looks, which, you know, is, should we say, polarizing, although we can't find many people actually like it. So this is just something that people are going to buy because they like its looks and they want to make a really big statement. So I think they're going to sell a bunch in China. They're going to sell a bunch probably in Miami, maybe parts of LA, and that's probably a lot. It's a really strange car.
This is one of those dilemmas for BMW. Like you said, the look is polarizing, and we're kind of been seeing that from BMW. But oftentimes we can accept that because the vehicle is so good. You talk about like BMW M3, M4, and go, you know, this is such a good car that you can kind of start to get over, you know, whatever the grill or something that's going on it, some of the elements you don't like. BMW M2, that's a weird looking little car. And I think it's probably very good, but also very weird looking. But now you're saying it rides like shit.
weird looking.
So
it's expensive.
So the proposition on this is diminishing by the second.
And it weighs 7 million pounds.
Yeah, yeah. And you know,
170 grams.
Was there any redeeming quality you could take from it whatsoever?
I mean, it handles well for something that weighs so much and is an SUV. You know, it's like on the track, it felt, you know, they've got lots of, you know, automatic ride control, you know, like stabilization, all sorts of stuff going on. So that bit's good. I mean, it's still fast because it's got loads of power, but no, honestly, like you get it and you're just like, and I think also I get the impression that It's just a bit sad that it's an M car, that, you know, there's this. I grew up like loving the M3s and the 80s and stuff. And then you get, you know, that this is their first proper M car since the 70s. And it's a really mediocre SUV that's not very sporting.
So it's the 4.4 liter V8 combined with electric motors. And you said a pretty big battery, but we don't know what the effect is on that battery. Can it?
He can do 34. I think it's like we tested it. I think at the top of my head, I think we did 34 miles of electric range. So
right.
That
to me is not impressive. Like that's not a thing. Like how come we're not getting into that 50, 60 mile range? Yeah.
And to achieve that, they've got a big battery pack. So I plugged it in at home and my charger is set up for the Tesla. And it said, oh, you've just added 70 miles. And I looked at it and I went, no, I've added 30 miles because this thing is half as efficient as my Tesla.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Okay, so BMW comes out with the XM. It looks goofy. It rides stiff and it's tough to find an audience and it's more expensive. So then BMW said, let's make a label red version of this that's even more extreme on all of those issues, even more expensive, even less efficient. And just as goofy looking, I guess.
Is that, I think it's more goofy looking because it's now got red piping everywhere. Yeah, it looks like a children's birthday cake.
This is not a glaring ad for BMW.
It's just an interesting. I like BMW. I'm a fan of BMW. I just don't know what they've been doing the past few years. I just don't.
It's like we have an IX on our fleet, and the IX is a fantastic car. It really is.
Now, that's the all-electric one, right?
That's the all-electric one. And honestly, I think that's like one of the best EVs out there at the moment. And that's not just my opinion, but that's it. We all love it. It's just the looks are challenging. And if it, we loved it, my wife had an i3 before we got the Tesla, and we loved that car. And we said, if we could just scale this thing up, you know, we'd buy it in a heartbeat. And that's kind of what the IX is, but it's a bit expensive. It's 70, 80 grand. But that's just a really good thing in a slightly odd-looking frog, basically.
Well, listen, BMW's website says the IX 50 starts at 87,000 and the IX 60 starts at 111,000 and change.
It's 87 now. Jeez.
Yeah. So 87,100 versus 111,500. And the ranges for the two battery styles are 307 miles and then 293 for the IX M60. And I was going to ask, you know, why isn't this getting more attention? I guess maybe the looks are doing it, but for some reason, all of the EV talk that we get, you know, it's Tesla, some of the American cars, Genesis, you know, a Hyundai is getting attention. How do we still keep missing like Acura? I'm sorry, not Acura, Audi and BMW in the conversation.
Yeah, and Mercedes even, like, you know, they have their, I noticed they're doing a lot of advertising around the EQS. They've got the EQE. We have an EQE sedan in at the moment. There's an EQE. We just driven the EQE SUV. So everybody's coming with this stuff. But yeah, I think you're right, because also BMW with the i3 had a real lead in this stuff. Everybody thought it was cool. And they had the i8 hybrid.
Yeah.
And people, I'd be interesting to see where we are sitting like 2 or 3 years time, because EVs are going to become normal play. So people will just revert to buying BMW, Mercedes, Porsche is going to have a Macan EV, and, you know, things just settle down and we're back to where we started from. But I don't know. Tesla's not going anywhere.
I mean, look, compared to the BMW, the Audi Q8 e-tron is a pretty sharp looking SUV, and the Sportback version, you know, that kind of that coupe version, that's a cool looking SUV, and it's not as fast as the BMW, but it's certainly less expensive. I want to say the e-tron Sportback is 77,800 and then 74,400 for the normal SUV version. And I don't know, I think the Sportback is 300 miles range and maybe it's a little slower than the BMW, but I don't know. I just feel like, why isn't this thing getting more attention? For, you know, fully loaded, you can get the Q8 e-tron Sportback for 100 grand. I mean, my truck cost, my F-150 Lightning cost 100 grand. And now I'm really kind of looking at this thing going, hey, you know, it's a little more practical. It's gorgeous. And it's easier to park. Like, you know.
Yeah, they just updated that thing as well. They've just done, you know, that's the sort of midlife facelift. Yeah, I mean, there's some cool stuff coming. The Mercs are nice. The, you know, Porsche's going to get into the game with the Macan later on this year. So it's all happening. Yeah.
And the Audi, the, I don't know, the GT, you know, the basically the Porsche Taycan version of the Audi, you know, it's like the Taycan, it's, you know, 0 to 60 in like 3.1 seconds. It has like a 230 something mile range, but it's, I don't know, it's like $30,000 or $40,000 less money than the Porsche. And I think it's maybe even better looking than the Porsche. I'm not sure why we're not really talking about it. You drove it. Is it just,
yeah,
not
we
there?
Were really disappointed. I mean, I don't like its looks as much as the Taycan, but that's just subjective. Yeah, we were a bit underwhelmed by it. It's just, you kind of think basically this is a Taycan with a different body, but somehow it just doesn't hang together as well, doesn't drive as well as a Taycan, and it just didn't really stack up that. And you don't see, I haven't looked at the sales figures, but you just don't instinctively see many about. Like, when, even in LA, when was the last time you saw one? It's been a while where Taycans are everywhere.
Well, there is one in Sammy Hagar's garage. His wife drives the Audi. Yeah. It's red, it's gorgeous, it's nice, and she loves it. But you're right. It seemed like of those two vehicles, Taycan got all the press and all the attention.
And it came first, I think, as well. That was the big
And then the Audi version, which is probably more bang for the buck. But I guess if it's just not quite there, as you're saying, driving, you know, maybe that's why. But I don't know how the Audi Q8 e-tron drives. I just drove the Q4 e-tron, which we'll save for another show. But, you know, short answer, in my opinion, and we'll get see what you think, but the Audi Q4 e-tron, it was fine in all aspects. It didn't feel like an Audi to me. I was just feeling looking for something a little bit more upscale. It just looked like a fancier version of the Volkswagen ID4. Like all the door panels, everything was plastic in it. The dash is plastic. And I was like, where's the Audi? You know, and I get it's the entry level Audi. If you just want to get into something that says Audi, it's nice. And I think it looks better than the Volkswagen ID4, but it didn't feel like a luxury vehicle to me.
Yeah, because it is basically a tarted up version of the ID4. You're quite right.
I know, but it seems like, hey, we're, you know, give it a little bit of like, let's throw an Alcantara headliner in here. Let's put some leather on the doors and some soft touch on the dash or some nicer woods. And everything was just plastic in there. And just the whole door panel, everything is plastic. It just seemed kind of cheap. but I don't know. I guess if it's $50,000, then maybe that's why they're trying to like, hey, you want to get into an electric car, you want to get into an Audi, you know, for $50,000-ish, maybe with a bunch of options, you're at $60,000, and they're going, hey, do you want to get into a Mustang Mach-E for that price range, or do you want to get into the Audi? And you can kind of, I'm sure they're different and they're different driving dynamics, but similar price range, you're just going after, you know, do you want Audi or do you want Ford?
No, agreed. And I'm also just getting a bit bored of like all the performance talk, because I've just spent the last 2 weeks in our Lucid long-term test car, and it's actually getting a lot better. We had so many problems with that car, but actually they've done something like 30 over-the-air updates, and the software is getting way better. So I'm starting to enjoy the car for the first time. But you just never, the reality is you just never use the performance. You've got three different modes. I just have it in like the most chilled out mode. You only ever use like 20% of the throttle, even in that mode. So all this like craziness, oh, we're going to have a truck that does 0 to 60 in 4 seconds, like the Rev. It's like, I don't know. I'm just getting a bit bored of it all, because you just don't, the reality is that's not how you use a car. So it's all about these startups trying to create a name for themselves and, you know, make a big fuss. The reality is actually it's bloody miserable driving, you know, booting an 800 horsepower car with people in it.
I'd be honest with you. I think any new car that comes out, especially any new EV from a startup company, if it came out and the quality was really good, that would get all of the press, all of the attention. And unfortunately, it's easier to make the vehicle fast and get attention that way than it is to make the vehicle really good. It's tough to make a good vehicle. If you said, this is the best built vehicle we've seen from a startup automotive manufacturer ever, you know, granted, it's got a few things that need to work out, but if you're like, all around, this thing just seems to work, and that was it, that was the story, that would really, I think, get our attention. And you're right, fast is fast, but there's a lot of things that are fast.
Even Lamborghini's CEO was saying to me, like, one of the things they've got to get their head around is actually going really fast in an EV is actually not a great experience. You know, you feel a bit sick. It's not a particularly visceral thing. And every EV is fast. So what does a Lamborghini EV do? And that's a big problem for them.
You know, and we'll wrap up in a second, but it seemed like we've had this discussion. We're like, you know what? All cars are pretty good these days. Like, things are kind of stepping up. And it used to be, you know, 30 years ago, a car manufacturer would release 40 different cars, and if three of them were financial hits, that's enough for the balance sheet. Now you kind of have to make everything pretty successful. And I don't know what happened, but it's just like, I just read recall after recall after recall, and it doesn't matter the quality of your brand. I mean, I guess on some level, I just don't see still a lot of Lexus recalls. They seem to be doing a pretty good job with the quality. But I mean, just, you know, Tesla, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai's, Kia's, just, you know, everything out there, even, I don't know, Mercedes or whatever, like everything is just suffering from recalls. Like, what is going on? Are we just rushing to build stuff quickly, or are these car companies really trying to get into new territory with the hybrid systems, electrification, and they're just missing stuff or cutting corners? Because, by the way, all the recalls are not necessarily all around like battery technology and EV technology. Like, maybe they're just investing so much in that to make sure that works that they're missing the boat on things like wheels and tires and steering wheels and brakes and seat belts, things that they should know are all getting recalled.
I'd say it all contributes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not wrong. It just seems interesting. I think I'd like to see more, especially because I don't know, the $40,000 car is dying, and it's a $60,000 car now. Like, $60,000 seems to be the entry point.
And that was one thing, like, the Nissan guy was saying, because I was thinking, like, how do you stretch? You know, the Kia EV9, we could maybe talk about another time, because that was at the show. But that's going to be 70 grand for, like, a three-row Kia. And then Nissan were basically saying, like, when you look at the cost, the average price of a vehicle, or what people, you know, if you take the trucks out and everything else, you know, people don't have the wherewithal with interest rates and everything else. You know, people like to spend 30 grand on a car. So it's not like people can, everybody can turn around and say, oh, now I can spend 60 grand, because they just don't have the means. So in essence, like, things have got to normalize for EVs and everything else at about 30 grand, because we know that's where the car buying market is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been kind of interesting.
Interesting.
The prices are going up. All right, we'll wrap it up for today. And yeah, lots of good stuff coming from New York Auto Show. It's all going to be up on Edmunds.com. So you guys want to check that out. Of course, their YouTube channel as well. Alistair, is there anything else that we're missing?
No, I think we're all good. I'm at Weaver on Cars. So check me out too.
Give them a follow. Let them know what you guys think. I appreciate it, guys, and we'll see you next week. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag of the week.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.